right? But if you want to fly, if you want to do something that feels impossible, and this happens in sport all the time, you wouldn't go out and just wrestle, right? You have a wrestling coach. But we also don't think about what that looks like from in between the ears as often as we should. And having somebody who can support that process, evolving your mindset and evolving your relationship to all of this, that's just going to give you access to something that felt impossible otherwise.
Welcome to another episode of Success for the Athletic-Minded Man. Real talk on harnessing your athletic drive for clarity, consistency, and focus in business and life. This is your host, Jim Harshaw Jr., and today I bring you Dr. Pete Kadushin. Dr. Kadushin has been the mental performance coach for the Chicago Blackhawks and has worked with lots of other professional athletes, collegiate athletes, military, businessmen and women, etc. And what you're about to hear, the next 45 minutes or so, or if you listen to this in 2x speed, 20 some minutes, is going to be the best time that you will spend in the next at least 30 days, because what you're about to hear, what you're about to listen to, will affect you and help you be a better version of yourself, will help you be more productive, more confident, more focused, and more consistent in everything else that you do because of what you're about to hear right now. So make sure you're not distracted, or make sure you have an opportunity to take notes or capture the things that you can capture from this episode and actually put them to use, because there's so much good here. And if you don't have an opportunity to capture those things, just make sure you're grabbing the action plan. Go to jimharshawjr.com/action and go ahead and forward this to someone you know. Who do you know who needs to hear from a mental performance coach who's maybe successful, but you know they have even more potential and they could maybe have a breakthrough by listening to an episode like this? Pete was recommended to me by my good friend, Travis Macy, who I've had on the podcast a couple of times. He's an author, speaker, and world-class endurance athlete who's become a good friend over the years. And I'm so grateful for Travis for having introduced us. And it's just such a fun conversation. Here's my interview with Dr. Pete Kadushin. So we didn't talk about this before we hit record, but I worked in athletics, college athletics, for years. And it was fun. I worked at a Power 5, now Power 4. School, University of Virginia. I got sideline access and got to fly on the private planes and the charters and, you know, sit in the president's box when the number one basketball team in the country was playing. And like, it was fun. It was fun working in athletics, fun working around that energy, but I didn't get to interact with the athletes like you did. And you are working with the Chicago Blackhawks, world-class athletes, professional level, obviously a step higher. What's that been like?
Yeah, it's to be able to see behind that curtain, because I've worked with athletes my entire professional career as a mental performance coach. And there's kind of two different pieces here. The first is working with that level of athlete is revealing. And then the way that my job was a few years ago, I was embedded with the team. And so I was at every practice, I was at every game. And so I really got to see what a 7.5 month, 82 game season unfolded like.
Brutal.
And I mean, it's unbelievable. They call it the grind for a reason. And what's really staggering from that side is what it looks like. You know, normally when you're watching a sporting event, right, you watch until the end, you turn it off, and then the team just magically appears wherever they're supposed to be next.
Yeah.
Right. You know, our game would end, and then we would have to, the equipment guys are the true unsung heroes, right? They'd get all the gear packed up. You'd have to then put it in a truck. You'd have to bus it someplace along with all the players and all the staff. You'd get on a plane and then you'd fly to the next spot. You'd land at 1 a.m, 2 a.m, bus to the hotel. And then sometimes you'd have to turn around and either practice on the road the next day or go and play a game the next day. And so when you look at that whole rhythm, 3 or 4 games a week, practice in between, a couple of off days scattered across a month, it's really... what stands out is that the recovery aspect, the negative space, really becomes so much more important, because it's not about being able to bring it just once every couple of weeks, right? Or once a week, if you think about like certain football teams and things like that. It was the guys who can be consistent in their quality are the ones that are going to keep their spots and they're going to produce, they're going to get their next contract. And so that was what really stood out from the length of season standpoint. I think what stood out with that level of athlete is there's a tipping point, which is on the way up into these different sort of strata of athlete, right? Your intermediates and then your experts and your elites. you got to work harder. You got to add more. You got to do more in the weight room. You got to think about what else you're going to add in terms of mental training. With these guys at the top of the pyramid, it was about, what do I need to pull out? How can I create more space? How can I create more slack? Because what got them there was, I got to do a lot. I got to do more. I got more reps, quality, volume, all of that. And at a certain point, that shifts. And that was something that was really kind of driven home for me when I was working exclusively with that level of athlete.
That's interesting. Oh, a couple things I want to unpack there. So the consistent quality, and I think this is very relevant to the listener. So for the listener, you're sitting there going, yeah, well, these guys are professional world-class athletes competing multiple times a week. And so are you, really, as for the listener. Like, how did these guys go about performing at that consistent quality? Because for us out here, the athletic-minded man in the working world, you know, with a family and our career and trying to stay healthy and fit along the way, how do you show up day in, day out, 82 games, 7.5 month season? That is just absolutely brutal.
Yeah. And I think the illusion that we get with Nike ads and other stuff you see on social media is that it's like, these guys just have more willpower and discipline than everybody else. Right. And they certainly have a phenomenal amount of mental toughness. Right? But I think what stands out for me is that it's really about having the support structure in place. Right. So they're a part of a team. Right. They have a community. They know they're going to show up and see the guys at the rink. They're going to have their support staff who've got their back. And I think the other piece is that the structure that they set and the routines that are in place support them as they're both making progress during practice. It supports them leading up to a game. And then the recovery aspect obviously is huge when you're looking at trying to perform consistently. Yeah. And so it's not just leaving it up to, all right, well, I got to want it this morning. I better build that motivation and hype myself up. It's about having the structure and then the support around them so that they could continue to show up consistently, even on the days that they didn't really feel like it.
So for the listener, we have something in my program, which we call the Environment of Excellence. And this is about who are you surrounding yourself? Who is your team? Who are the people who are helping you, supporting you, guiding you, calling you out, seeing your blind spots, supporting you, providing, you know, from equipment managers, you're talking about, Pete, like, we need this too. And for the listener, you don't have that, right? You are not a professional athlete, most likely. And it is not provided to you like it is for these world-class athletes who are trying to, you know, the organization's trying to get every ounce of potential out of them and provide every bit of infrastructure so that they can just show up and be the best that they can do and win games. You don't have that. Most likely, you know, you might have some of that, but like, who are the people in your life? And so how do, any advice, Pete, for the guy listening to this who doesn't have that infrastructure, could benefit from that infrastructure? I mean, how do we think of that? I don't know if you can help us translate that into guys who are out here, not professional athletes.
Yeah, it's a great question. And always working with purpose, right? Thinking backwards, you know, I'm a big fan of Stephen Covey's Begin with the End in Mind.
Yeah.
And so if we're trying to create an environment around us that's going to pull us up, it means that we have to be willing to be below the people around us in some form or fashion.
Yeah.
And so the way I think about that is that I want to look around and see people who are further along the path, who are doing things that I would like to be doing, but I can't quite do yet, or are living a life and have things shaped in a certain way so that they're kind of being able to embody the experience I want to embody. Mm-hmm. And then I want to find ways to spend time with them and find ways to contribute so that it's not just a transactional, hey, like, tell me what you know, right? But I've got nothing to offer in return. And so there's that one piece around maybe mentorship, you would call that. And then from a community standpoint, being clear about what my values are and then being able to surround myself with people who have similar values and are committed to some of the same, not necessarily same goals, right? It's not like being on a hockey team where the goal is to win the Stanley Cup, right? But for me, surrounding myself with people who share those values, want to live, you know, an ethical, positive life, leave it better than they found it. And so I think if you merge those two pieces, you would have the themes that you would be looking for when you start thinking about how you're going to surround yourself with the people who are going to support you on your journey up the mountain.
Quick interruption. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to get the notes, quotes, and links in the action plan from this episode. Just go to jimharshawjr.com/action. That's jimharshawjr.com/action to get your free copy of the action plan. Now, back to the show. I know my clients who are listening are smiling right now because they're like, man, this guy's giving a pitch for Jim's
I got your back, coaching. Man.
I mean,
yeah.
This is it. I mean, you are saying exactly what we provide for my clients. We provide this community and like-minded guys, similar values, all, you know, chasing excellence in every area of their lives.
Well, and I'd like to qualify, I don't have any experience with your program. And so this is happening organically.
Yes,
that's the magic of the moment.
Exactly. Exactly. It is. And it's just, this is the kind of stuff, actually, these are the conversations that helped me build this program. Like talking to guys like you and going to, and really reflecting back on my own life and knowing like, we need this infrastructure in order to be our best. We need this infrastructure and we all struggle. And that's the next question I have for you, Pete, is like, these are world-class athletes. And if they didn't struggle, if everything was just easy for them, they just showed up and performed well, they had full confidence, never had any self-doubt, there's no need for a Pete, right? To come in and support them, help them, guide them. There's no need for mindset, mental performance, coaching, anything like that. But they do have that, right? They have that support structure. Tell me a little bit about how these guys struggle. You think that it's, you know, these guys, you know, they're the best in the world, so they don't struggle with confidence. Do they? Do they struggle with mindset, struggle with confidence, setbacks, dealing with failure, all of that?
They're humans, and so they can't help but struggle with those things. And there's one story that I remember, and it makes me laugh, but it also really illustrates how this plays out sometimes. It was morning skate. I was sitting on the bench next to the equipment guy and right next to all the sticks, and one of our guys skates over. He says, hey, you know, let me see my other stick. And he sets them side by side, and they look like they're the same length. And he looks at the equipment guy. He goes, I swear to God, this is like 1 millimeter shorter than the other. And I can tell, and it's totally throwing me off.
Wow.
Right. And on some level, these guys are finely tuned to their instrument and their craft. And so you can tell when there's subtle differences. Right. But he kind of looked at me and laughed and then skated off. And it was clear at that point that he was attributing and really getting fixated on an equipment issue, right? Instead of being able to find, you know, there's something that was feeling off and then address that and recognize that there's something was going on in between his ears instead, right? And we see this a lot in sport, but also across the mental performance spectrum, is that it's a lot easier to say like, oh, you know what, my equipment was off or my sleep was off or this was going on and blame something else. Instead of pause and go like, all right, how am I relating to whatever's going on in the moment? And so there's opportunity there. And the reason why this comes up for professional hockey players and the reason why it would come up for your listeners as well is that when we care deeply about an outcome and the outcome is uncertain, which is life, right? We don't know, you know, even in the world's greatest mismatch of, you know, one seed to 200 seed, right? The reason we play sport is because you don't know what's going to happen. Right, so the outcome's always uncertain, but we care about the outcome. That's going to generate some activation and some attachment to the outcome. And so we get nerves, we get anxiety, we want to force things to be one way or wish that we could impose our will in one direction, but also know that one bad break or a couple bad breaks and things are out of our control and it could go the other. And so we're grappling with that existential issue as performers, you know, sport or otherwise. And so it's natural that struggling around that, because we wish it was another way, right? We wish we could just wave our magic wand and make our outcomes happen. Right? And so, of course, the professional athletes are struggling with that same thing, right? And in times where they're having a more challenging moment, right, where that shift didn't go well, that game or series of games didn't go well, right, then it's easy to get into your head. And it's easy to sit there and go, okay, well, maybe it is because of me and maybe it's never going to change, right? Time scale tends to get really crunched and distorted when we're having a down period, right? You think about slumps in sport. We don't usually, when we're, you know, crushing it, go, this is going to last forever. We wait for the other shoe to drop. And when we're down in the hole, we go like, yeah, man, I'm going to be down in the hole forever. And so you can see how we set it up to lose-lose instead of win-win. And this is, I think, part of our natural, you know, human evolution of the way our brains and minds work, right? But it also sets us up that we can't get out of it as fast as we could if we're working with someone like a coach.
Right. You need somebody to pull you out of that. Like the listener, you probably know some of these things. You've heard some of this before. But do you have somebody who actually extract? One of my clients says, Jim, I need you to extract me from the matrix, right? Mm. Pull him out, see what he's not seeing, get him sort of above the battlefield so he can identify the things that he's saying to himself or the things that he's doing by default that maybe aren't not working for him. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this attachment to the outcome. We are all attached to the outcome. You don't play hockey games for fun at that level, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, theoretically, you're trying to win the game. You're trying to win the championship. But at the same time, I mean, performance psychology 101 is you got to try to detach from the outcome. Can you talk about that conundrum, that separation of just performing your best? Hey, just do your best, right? Little Johnny, go just do your best, little Johnny. And people go, oh, that's, you know, you're out there to win and win at all costs. And it's like, but you really do have to detach from the outcome. How do you do that? And just talk about that concept too.
Yeah, there's a real interesting conundrum. You put your finger right on it here, which is that motivation only exists when we want something to be different, right? And so don't do something for nothing. And at the same time, mm-hmm. we're also told that we need to be fully invested in the process and unattached to the outcome. And so we're working against our human wiring, right? You wouldn't walk into Target, put down $100 on the table and then be like, hey, thanks for nothing, right? We exchange our energy for something. And so when you look at this, I love Josh Waitzkin. He wrote The Art of Learning. And in a recent podcast episode I was listening to, he said the price of admission for excellence is that you have to care deeply enough about the outcome that you're going to be shattered if you don't get it, right? And so this really helped shift things around because working with a number of my clients, you can hear them want to step over this piece and they're like, I just need to care less about the outcome. Well, you wouldn't be talking to me if you didn't care about the outcome. You wouldn't spend hours a week, you know, practicing if you didn't care about the outcome. And so to pretend that you don't care about it is actually just twisting you up and wasting more energy, and it's costing you attention when it comes time to actually go perform. And so what I really love about Josh's stuff is that he says the price of admission is you got to know that it's going to feel awful. You're going to be heartbroken if you don't get it. And then once you've cleared that bar, you acknowledge, yes, I accept that it's going to feel like shit for this to happen. Then after that, that frees you up to just focus on the process because you've already acknowledged there are good outcomes out there, there are bad outcomes out there. I know that the whole spectrum is available, and then I can come back to what is the process. And so to answer your first question last, how do you do it? We have to know what your process is, right? And so being clear on what do I do and how am I when I'm at my best, and what are the things that I can control that are upstream, right? Because I can't control a quiet environment. I can't control having a perfect night's sleep last night, although I can move some levers to help me get better sleep. But in the moment, what is it that actually is available to me? And for me, I think it's your intention and your attention. And that's kind of it. Right? Everything else flows from there. And so we can talk about all sorts of other stuff, emotion regulation and managing self-talk. But all of it, when you break it down into its component parts, is about what are you intending to do? And then how can I put my attention in a specific place in a way that's going to facilitate that intention?
Yeah, that's good. You mentioned Josh Waitzkin. One of my favorite quotes of his is, if our mind is a supercomputer, our self-talk is the program that's running it. And self-talk is very related to intention and attention, right? What are the words that we're saying to ourselves? But before that, I do want to mention there's a quote that I had from a world champion wrestler, Jaden Cox. He said, I finally started performing at my best when I realized that failure actually is an option. Like, failure is an option. If I'm going to step into the arena, if I'm going to apply for the job, go to the interview, make the sales pitch, start the business, you know, sign up for the marathon or whatever it is, like, failure is an option. Like, so as soon as you can recognize that and know that I'm going to go into this and understand that there are two possible outcomes here, success and failure. Maybe it's not binary. Maybe they're somewhere in the middle, but like there are different outcomes and I'm going to chase the one that requires my excellence, and I'm going to focus on the process, not the outcome. But as soon as you can acknowledge that, yeah, you're right. That allows you to take that baggage of that fear of failure off the table and allows you to get after it.
Yeah, it's a paradoxical thing that you could acknowledge that some bad stuff could happen, and that would be the thing that allows you to drop into the present moment and be connected to what's here in the present moment. But we see this play out over and over again. One of my favorite documentaries, when you're thinking about sort of the extremes of mental performance and mindset, is Free Solo. And so Alex Honnold climbing without ropes, these 3,000-foot rock faces. And one of the things that really stands out is he said, you know, of course I acknowledge that I could fall to my death. And that's the work that I have to do in the van the night before. Right? Because if I can't accept that there's that consequence, and it's the ultimate consequence for most of us, and if I can't accept that that's true and then feel like I'm ready to climb with that as part of the background, then it's not time for me to go climb. And that's not a negotiation that he wants to have with himself 1,000 feet up. Mm. And so for us, and how does that translate to our lives? When something that is possible feels unacceptable, we're stuck. It's that simple. When I say I can't possibly let this happen, but in the abundance of life, it could happen, then I'm spending inordinate amount of energy and attention and time focusing on something that I can't actually influence. As soon as I put that down, now all of a sudden I have that time and that energy and that attention, and I get to deploy that towards things that I can impact. And that makes me much more effective.
Yeah. It frees you up to be you. It frees you up to leverage the knowledge and skills and ability, education, all of the intangibles that you have, all of the assets that you have, get released, and you can bring those to bear towards your goal whenever you acknowledge that, you know, there are a number of different outcomes that could happen here.
So I had a team I was working with, a high-level cross-country team, and in a workshop, I brought us like a shoulder bag and a bunch of textbooks. And we were talking through some of the worries and things that might come up in the course of a race or leading up to a race. And so we named them, we had the textbooks, and I put them into a bag. And then I said, okay, who wants to race me? And, you know, one of the fastest guys on the team's like raises his hand, said, great. And then I threw the bag over his shoulder and I said, ready, set, go. And I ran, and I took off. And it was a really, right, we're trying to draw these conceptual, you know, ideas out into the world in a way that we can make sense of them and see them clearly. You go, okay, well, if I had to do that every race, I would be less effective, right? If you put a cast on my foot, if you tie one arm behind my back, right? Whatever it is, right? We see the physical manifestation of that. It's harder to recognize when we're trapped in our own space of going like, right, but I don't want to get injured. Well, if you're going to be on a mountain bike, there is a possibility that you're going to get hurt. If I'm spending any of that energy, it's like throwing one of those book bags in a bag, putting it on my back or slinging it over my shoulder. Right. And so, you know, we finished that workshop with him naming each of the books as the and having the team help him name them and then taking them out. And I said, OK, you want to race again? You know, and we ran maybe 200 meters and he'd already dusted me. Right? But it was an example of if you were willing to put those down. Right? And it starts with a willingness, because most of the time, athletes or performers struggle to even acknowledge they're there, but then it's kind of like, well, I want to tuck up close with this, right? I don't want that bad thing to happen. I don't want to acknowledge that it could. And so you have to be willing to put it down. And sometimes that's enough, is just to name, hey, I'm good with that. It could happen. I'm going to put it here. And now it's time to get back to business.
Yeah. 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 Am I willing to put it down? You know, like you mentioned, like, you know, an injury could happen or something could happen along the way. It's like, if you're going to start the business, you know, you're going to make a mistake probably somewhere along the way. You know, if you're going to do the sales pitch, you might get the tough question that you're really uncomfortable asking. And am I willing to do that? Sure. I'm willing to do that. If I'm not, then I'm carrying the books. I'm handicapping myself in some other way and mentally. And we don't necessarily see that. And it's a great, great analogy and great exercise to help people actually see what they're doing by mentally holding themselves back. Now, what do you see, Pete, between even at the highest level, right? Professional athletes or any athletes you've worked with, military, business. What do you see as the difference between those who are pretty good and those who are truly great? What are they doing differently? And you know, maybe it's the physical stuff. Maybe it's their warm-ups. They get this magical warm-up. I really think it's probably more of the internal type stuff. Well, what is different about the great ones that the good ones don't have or do?
There are two things that stand out to me right off the top of my head. The first is that there is some level, because we just got done talking about outcome and process. There is some level of meaning or enjoyment that's infused into the process. Right? And so the performers that I've interacted with who are truly elite, right, some of the greatest, they obviously want to win, and they want to win often. They're hyper-competitive. No issue there, right? You can be really focused on outcome and also really connected to process. But they've found a way to really find enjoyment or meaning, right? So not always just, hey, that was fun, because sometimes it's type two fun. That sucked, but I know it was important. And they've found a way to infuse that and find that consistently in the process day to day, because that's what fuels growth over the course of decades. Right. Again, coming back to this idea, it's like you don't show up and you're not just disciplined forever. These guys wake up just like you and just like me, and there are days where they don't want to do it. Right. And it's a matter of going, but once I get into it, right. And I find this happens to me when I'm, you know, not feeling like working out, and I get into the workout, and either halfway through or right at the end, I go, man, I'm really glad that I did that. That felt good. Right? These guys do that, and they've found it in a consistent way. And so that is, I think, step one is finding that and then finding ways to infuse that into our experience so that it's not a battle every day to go, oh, man, here's the thing I have to do, but I don't want to do. Going like, oh, you know what? I really enjoy. I love getting better. Right? I love the process and the grind of getting better. And here's why. And it's not something we have to leave up to chance or wait for somebody to gift to us. We can go hunting for that right now. The other piece that stands out to me is that these sort of strata of athlete are separate, right? As opposed to one continuum where you just got to do more of the thing that got you here. At some point, you have to abandon what got you here and essentially reinvent yourself to get to the next level. And that's really scary. Right? There's a wonderful article that was written back in the 80s by a sociologist and a swim coach called The Mundanity of Excellence. And it really speaks to this idea of these are discrete like spaces, right? So you don't just climb a straight ladder up to the top of excellence, right? You got to get off the ladder you're on when you get to the top of the beginner ladder, and then you got to climb the intermediate ladder, and you got to get off that ladder. And it's scary when you're up there because it's pretty high up, and you got to go find the start of the expert ladder. And the athletes and performers that I've seen who have really continued to grow and become elite are the ones who are willing to make that leap of faith. Because there's at some point, when you think about transformation, one example that's really vivid is like turning into a butterfly from a caterpillar. Inside the cocoon, it's just goo, right? The caterpillar has truly fallen apart and it turned into nothingness. Well, that's scary. When you think about the mindset that got you here or the strategic approach that got you here and saying, well, I know I want to get there and it feels impossible and I know I'd need to do something different, but this is all I know how to do right now. The best are the ones who say, okay, well, I'm going to figure it out. And then going back to what we talked about, right? They have the support team and they have the people around them and the environment that's going to allow them to get from here to there and then be fully formed as butterflies once they arrive.
Yeah. Because, you know, listen, most of the guys listening to this have checked a lot of boxes in life, right? They've got, and not everybody, I don't want to put everybody into just one sort of box here, but, you know, got their degrees, job, maybe married, maybe kids, maybe cars, maybe house or houses, whatever those might be, or some combination of those. But you know there's more in the tank. You know there's another gear. You know you're leaving too much on the table. If you know there's more, and you wouldn't be listening to this podcast if you didn't feel that in some level, you know that there's more in you. You have to go about things in a different way, in the sense that, you know, what got you here won't get you there, right? That's the cliche that we all know and hear. But, you know, what made you a caterpillar is not going to make you a butterfly. There's got to be a change in the process, a change in the system, new resources brought in.
Yeah, when you think about it, you go, okay, well, you're a caterpillar. You look at the butterflies, you say, I'm just going to caterpillar harder and eventually I'll get there. That doesn't work. And so you see a lot of guys who get stuck kind of at that ceiling and they go, man, I know there's more, but I can't figure out what to do. And they're crammed up against the ceilings. Just like, well, I'm going to just go harder. I'm going to do more, put more hours in. I'm going to add volume, whatever it is. There has to be something different. And that's a really scary moment when you say, okay, well, I'm not quite sure if that's going to work, I know this works, but I also know it's holding me back. I don't know if that thing over there is going to work, but I'm called to make the shift. And again, the support, things like that you offer or I offer, that's where you can get across that gap a little bit smoother, a little bit faster, right? And then really start to soar.
I mean, first of all, caterpillar harder. I'm going to use that. Did you just come up with that on the fly?
I did.
That is really good. I'm going to reference you, but I'm going to so use that. Caterpillar harder. You can't caterpillar harder to become a butterfly. You have to actually change. And Tiger Woods is such a great example. I think he was 21 when he won his first major, and he completely revamped his swing. And it's like, wait a second, you're one of the best in the world. And he's like, nope, I'm not going to be a caterpillar. I'm going to be a butterfly, and I've got to make a complete change. And like you said, Pete, like it's not guaranteed to work. Like there were struggles and doubts and failures and figuring it out, going through that process. And we have to recognize that we need to do the same things. And you can't do this by yourself. Like the listener, like you can't just read another book or listen to another podcast. Like you've got to do, like, this is the consistent learning that you have to do, but you've got to go out and find the resources that can help you, right? Tiger Woods didn't go, okay, I'm just going to lock myself in a hole in a room by myself with some mirrors and watch myself revamp my swing. No, he had people around him helping him. And we all need that. If we want to go from the caterpillar to the butterfly.
Yeah. To extend that metaphor just for a moment, right? Let's assume that you're a caterpillar and you don't know that caterpillars turn into butterflies, because that's usually where we're at, right? Is like, man, I would love to be able to fly, right? But if you walked up to me as a coach and said, hey, Pete, you can grow wings, I'd be like, you're out of your mind. And so usually what we're needing to do or face or move through is sitting in our blind spot. And so to really put a point on what you're saying, somebody outside of you who has that perspective, who has that altitude and is able to say, hey, here's what's in your blind spot. Also, I get it. F me. That doesn't feel very comfortable. It's in your blind spot for a reason, right? And so it's not going to feel great when I point that out, right? But then is there to offer support and structure as you move through that, integrate that, and then go, oh my God, I can grow wings, right? That's the power of a coach. And it's not that I don't think people need coach, right? But if you want to fly, if you want to do something that feels impossible, and this happens in sport all the time. You wouldn't go out and just wrestle, right? You have a wrestling coach. You wouldn't just go out and then tinker with your swing. If you're a professional, you have a swing coach, right? But we also don't think about what that looks like from in between the ears as often as we should. And having somebody who can support that process of evolving your mindset and evolving your relationship to all of this, right? That's just going to give you access to something that felt impossible otherwise.
And those default words streaming through your mind as you go through your struggles, your challenges, your ups and your natural ups and downs, they have to be modified. I'll give you a perfect example for the listener.
Yeah.
I came back from vacation yesterday. I was off for 5 days or so, and great family time, just totally out of routine, totally out of rhythm, still getting my workouts in, but you know, getting enough sleep, but going to bed later. And I knew that I was gonna come back on Monday, or I had a feeling, you know, I've been through this before. Like I know that first day back from vacation, it takes a little bit more to get the fire going, the engine roll. And I had to talk my way through the day. Like it was hard. The sort of default self-doubt and, you know, self-consciousness started creeping in and, you know, am I just Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill? And I have a mindset coach. I have a mindset coach. I have a business coach. I have multiple coaches. And I had to go do that work, remember the work that we had done, get outside of my own head, remember the purpose of what I'm doing, you know, change my state, get up and I do three burpees whenever I'm feeling like I'm just kind of like not moving in the more, you know, through my day. Like I get up and I just do a few burpees just to move my body, change my state, stand up with my stand. I had to do that work. I had to speak out loud the things that I needed to hear. And guess what? It shifted me back into gear. I went from probably, I don't know, would have been a default like 60% kind of performance day to probably 85% performance day. And that's the work that we have to do. And that is normal. That is what these elite athletes do. And we have to do this for ourselves as well.
It's a great example, and it speaks to not just the tactics, but also our relationship to what's coming up, right? And so through the work that you've done, it's not that you've eradicated days where self-doubt shows up or, you know, trying to get back into rhythm, right? You're merging onto the highway and it's going to take a moment for you to get up to speed. It's that your relationship to that is like, oh yeah, here it is again. Hi, old friend. And here's some things I can do to work with you and make that dance feel a little different. And then that unlocks whatever you have capable of in that day. Right now it's available to you instead of locked behind the door.
So let's talk about tactics. Breath work, meditation, reflection. I mean, how do we go about it? I know you have sort of your principles of mental training, accelerated growth, grace under pressure, strategic evaluation. Can you talk to us a little bit about, like, how do we go about doing all this stuff that we're talking about? Certainly getting, you know, bringing on a coach and bringing people into your world. What else can we do? What other strategies and tactics can you share with us, Pete?
For me, if I could wave a magic wand, everybody would meditate. And everybody would meditate because the practice itself is elegant. It's simple, but it's definitely not easy. And it offers benefits that scale all the way from, you know, spiritual awakening, if somebody's into that, right? But scale all the way down to these micro moments of being distracted when I'm sitting behind my desk chair, and then just noticing that I'm distracted, even though I'm still in the window, right? I'm still doing whatever the work is that's in front of me, right? I'm not a whole, you know, entirely present. And so for me, it is if you're going to spend 5 to 20 minutes doing something and this isn't already a part of your routine, right? It's where you're going to get the most bang for your buck. And if you want me to tease that out a little bit more and give you the stump speech for why meditation, I'd be happy to do that. But I can't be emphatic enough that, like, if you're listening and you're not doing it, this is your highest point of leverage.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, give us the kind of 1 to 2 minute why.
The two pieces of mindfulness, which is the quality you cultivate when you meditate, are presence, and your best performance can only happen in the present moment. So the more you become acquainted with the present moment, the more you see what it feels like to be here in your body and not letting your mind, because we're normally in a daydream of all the thoughts and all the ish, you know, and this and that and the past and the future. So snapping out of that and being able to say, thoughts are still here. Right. And I'm in my body in this present moment. That feels different. And when I'm there and training that, it's going to happen more often when it's time to get my best performance. Right. So right there, you've already covered a ton of bases. But the other piece that's really important and the other quality of mindfulness is acceptance and non-judgment. And this is a piece that gets missed, which is if I get to the present moment, but I don't like anything when I get here, my back hurts, those thoughts suck, you know, I wish the day had unfolded differently. If I can't accept what's right in front of me right now, then I get bounced from the present moment. And you can see the consequence when it comes time to actually perform. Right? If I show up and I go, oh man, everything should be different. Well, I can't actually perform from here because I'm busy wishing I was over there. And so those two things trained with structure, and that's what meditation is. Those two things trained with structure unlock my ability to be present in practice, to accept the bad days and still get something good out of them, to ride the high and not trip myself up when things are rolling. So it really is foundational and builds upon itself in ways that the layers are endless in terms of what you can get as you continue to deepen the practice.
Yeah, so good. What else? What else can we do?
The other piece for me is having some structure to your reflection. Right. So a lot of times we reflect when things are not going well, and then we let it go when things are going well. And we do it in this elaborate way where it's like, all right, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to debrief the whole thing for an hour and I'm going to get into it and I'm sharpening my elbows beforehand. I'm really going to break it down. It's not sustainable. And so having something that is simple and you can do quickly, either at the end of every day or for the performers out there, end of performance, for me is the next highest point of leverage. And so I use Good, Better, How, right? You write down and you go heavy on what you did well. This is an issue because most of the time is when I teach this and then I get the report out from clients. It's like one thing I did well, if at all. And then what do I need to do better? Well, everything. And also I've framed it, you know, for most folks, it gets framed negatively. Here's all the things that I sucked at today. Hmm. You'll notice the language is actually really purposeful. What am I going to do better tomorrow? right? So it's future oriented and it's framed in an optimistic lens, which is really training our mindset so that we are identifying how we're going to improve. And then the how is, okay, I'm going to pick one. And this is another spot where people get tripped up because they're like, all right, I'm going to improve like 53 different things tomorrow. Mm. And if you try and juggle 53 chainsaws at once, it's a problem, right? And so you pick one and you say, okay, that's the spot. That's my highest point of leverage. How am I going to do that better tomorrow? And then you give yourself concrete marching orders. And man, if I put my head on the pillow and I've done 5 minutes of good, better, how, I know what I did well today, right? I've already created some sense of optimism about how I'm going to get better tomorrow. And I already have my marching orders. And so I don't have to be preoccupied with how bad today was. I don't have to be preoccupied with how is it going to get better. I already know what I need to do tomorrow. So when I wake up and I open my eyes, I'm ready to go. And so for me, in 5 minutes, I've covered so much ground. And with that structure, it's sustainable. And so I can do that every day before I go to bed or every day when I'm shutting up shop behind my desk. And that ends up giving me, again, the shaping of the mindset and also, right, a system for improvement as opposed to going like, well, I hope I get better today.
Hmm. This is the definition of a what I call a productive pause. The productive pause is a short period of focused reflection around specific questions that leads to clarity of action and peace of mind. And that is what good, better, how will give you, is that clarity of action, peace of mind. Pete, man, thank you for sharing such wisdom with us here today. Where can people find you, follow you, engage with you, et cetera?
Thank you for having me and for getting into it. I love having these conversations. Folks can find my podcast, the Mental Training Lab, at mtl.academy. And that really is the gateway. From there, you can find the rest of the website and drop me a note if you're interested in having a chat. I love having conversations with folks about mental training and helping them do the impossible. And so mtl.academy is like the one-stop shop.
Excellent. We'll have that link in the action plan for the listeners. As always, go to jimharshawjr.com/action and you'll get all the notes and quotes and great stuff out of this show here today. Make sure you check out Pete and follow his social media and engage with him as well. So, Pete, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom here.
Awesome, Jim. Thanks for having me.